You know what time it is, no matter where you've been. So let's do it again. Listen up and let the sun shine in. We've got soul training. Time to practice what you preach. Ooh, yeah. Yes, we do. We've got soul training.
And here's Daniel, Alan, and Joe.
Hello, dear listener. This is Alan Jones with Joe Pritchard and Daniel Gaines. We have a very, very special repeat guest, Mr. Sasha. How do you pronounce your last name?
Misitz.
Yes. He is with us. If you remember Sasha, he was with us about 3 years ago. And normally,
not 3 years ago. Timeline's very important here.
About how long ago?
2 years.
2 years ago. Okay. I'm not really good at math.
But wow, has it been that long?
Yeah, I couldn't. Normally, sorry about the pen there, Joe. Normally, I open up or lead in with something, you know, semi-comical or funny or lighthearted, but I want to maximize our time with Sasha today, and he is a unique guest in a lot of ways and so many positive ways, but he's going to revisit a discussion that we had about the war in Ukraine. And he is going to enlighten us once again about everything that pertains to him, his family, but also the church there in Ukraine. So I'm looking forward to this discussion, and hopefully we will learn a little more about Sasha. I know that he's super, super intelligent and has a terminal degree in mathematics. Looking forward to hearing more about that. So
yeah, revisiting Sasha's background a little bit. He's a math professor at VCU.
That's right.
At VCU. So if you ever find yourself taking upper level mathematics at VCU, maybe you'll be lucky enough to have Sasha.
Or if you're not and you just need some help, I've got a cell number.
That's true. That's true.
So he does private tutoring. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think he would help somebody out, I think. So, I know he would.
So last time that Sasha was here with us, the war in Ukraine was only a couple of months old, right?
That's right.
It had just started. And nobody thought that 2 years later we would still be doing this, at least if you listen to the American news, because Russia had this big plan that they were going to go in there and snap their fingers and then Ukraine would be a part of Russia. But now the Ukrainian folks had different plans. They decided to stand their ground and not let that happen, and they're still standing their ground right now. And so Sasha is Ukrainian. So nobody has a better perspective on this war than our man Sasha here. And, you know, he's going to bring forth some things that we haven't really heard about in our news much about how much religion plays a part in this role or in this war. And then about the church in Ukraine and what we can do to help, how we can encourage them. And different things like that. So that's kind of the rough, very rough outline of what we're wanting to do here. But before we start, we were talking before we recorded. We want to know a little bit about your spiritual background. We know a little bit about you personally, but we don't know much about how you came to learn about Jesus and to become a Christian.
Well, that's a great question. So I was born in the mid-80s in Ukraine, and when Ukraine became free, at least formally, in 91, I was just started my first year of school. And around this time, American teachers came to Kremenchuk with the mission to start a church and in a few years to start a college to teach preachers in Ukraine. Well, the first person they needed to have was an interpreter, because very few people were speaking English in 91 in Ukraine. It was the post-Soviet society where English was fairly rare in common life. And they came to the school where my mom was working as an English teacher, because she has a degree from Kyiv University in languages, and English and French. And they looked for volunteers to work for them. And I remember how everyone was so scared to work with Americans because for so many years, Americans were perceived as enemies. And here, 1 year later, they come and ask to work for them. So my mom was the only one who agreed, who did not believe into that propaganda that was there. And her salary at that school was about $20 a month in 91. And she was offered 50 to work as a college secretary and to coordinate the mission work, which was an astronomical amount at that time. So a few weeks later, KGB showed up and invited her for a questionnaire. And they asked, like, now, what's the true reason why those Americans came? And my mom was saying, well, they came to teach about Bible and to teach about salvation, to teach about Jesus. And the KGB said, well, we know exactly all of that story. Now, why did they really came? I repeated, I said, no, you don't understand. Religion is a cover-up. There must be a reason behind that. That's what we are looking for. And that made me think that there are some people who do not believe that Christians exist. There are people, especially in Russia right now, not so much in Ukraine anymore, but there are people who do not believe that Christians, that the churches are cover up for something. They're not sure for what, but it's a cover up for something. There is no way people would believe in what's written in the Bible and in Jesus. They're using it as an excuse to go around the world, to spy, to, I don't know, they come up with all the conspiracy theories, but they do not believe that a person can sincerely believe. That's what made, I didn't think about it that way, but that's, the more I speak to people who just have so strange set up in their mind, I'm just praying for the God to just open their eyes to something that's obvious.
Wow, that's that as a missionary, that perspective is really fascinating to me. And yeah, that story was interesting. I appreciate you sharing that with us. So, was your mom did she experience any additional scrutiny or mistreatment or anything because she was working with the Americans?
Not in Ukraine. I have a feeling that the Ukrainian society was always like it was a religious society before the it was taken over by the Soviet Union, and it. And then at the Soviet period, it was artificially made to be atheistic. But when the wall fell and the first American teachers came, the success was tremendous. There were like rooms were completely full. There was hardly any place to sit when an American teacher would come and would talk about Bible. And some of those people were there just to see Americans because they lived for most of their life without seeing an American alive, and it was a miracle to them. Some went there to listen to English, but a lot of people stayed at the church and truly understood the message, the meaning why Americans came. And so that's how the church in Kremenchuk got started, and the church picked up. Now, in terms of the persecution, like, this thing has never been in Ukraine. Ukraine has always been proud of being very, well, proud of being very peaceful despite poor. 90s was a very poor, like I mentioned, the range of salaries that were in the 91s when the Soviet economy collapsed, but market economy has not picked up at all. But Ukraine was very, very peaceful. And what's going on right now is very unnatural, and this could not have been thought of neither throughout the 90s nor through 2000s.
But you brought up a second ago, you said Christianity has to be a front for something, is what the Russians think, because no way somebody believes that with all their heart. But we were talking off the air a second ago, and you mentioned that there is religion in Russia, and it has this war apparently plays in to a part of their religion in some way. So can we, I think we talked about this a couple of years ago, but if you can do a quick narrative on what part the Russian Orthodox Church has in this war, that would be helpful for our listeners.
Well, the Orthodox Church, during the Soviet period, it went through various stages. In the 30s, it was completely banned to the point that some of the most valuable Christian, the church buildings, 1,000 years or more in Kiev, were leveled, were blown up just because they were church buildings. So in the way the Soviets were behaving, like Talibs in Afghanistan. Now, during the World War II, surprisingly, the Germans reopened some of the cathedrals that stayed, and they were open for a few years while Germans occupied Kiev. Now, after the war, some of the cathedrals were reopened by the Soviet authorities after the death of Stalin. And the reason was that the government wanted to use the instrument of confession, or in general, the priests who served there, they had to be registered in KGB and report who goes there, what do people say. So the church was being used to spy on people. And it was a well-known fact that the priests were registered in KGB. But there was one priest who now is Cyril, the head of the Orthodox Church in Russia. Now, he was not a priest who served for KGB. His story was different, and it was revealed. He was a KGB agent who was sent to church on a mission and to be in charge of the church. So the Russians and the Soviet authorities realized that the church is a powerful tool to influence and to manipulate people. And they were not original in that. I think even back in the Romans realized how powerful the church was, how powerful this religion was, and how they wanted to use it to manipulate people to do one thing or another. During the Crusades, we were seeing how the church was misused for very brutal, for very cruel reasons. And Russians are no exceptions. Now, they used something that's called a church only formally to justify the biggest brutalities, to justify all the crimes that they are performing, and to manipulate the minds of people who go there. Now, if you go to an Orthodox church in Russia, you hardly will see any true Christian lesson there. You will only hear the propaganda that justifies the aggression and the expansion, and you'll hear the lies. So I would have difficulties calling that a church.
Right. Well, the lesson there seems to be, it's the responsibility, Daniel, help me out on the scripture, where they searched the scriptures daily to see what was true.
Mm-hmm. Those Bereans.
Yeah, the Bereans.
The Bereans. We need to be protecting the church by searching the scripture and making sure what's being taught is true.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it seems to be a pretty good idea to have a separation between the government and religion. We saw a little bit of that during the COVID years. I'm not getting political with this or anything, but there were some overreaches. I'm thinking of a guy in Canada. There were some Canadian folks that they were being arrested for preaching
mm-hmm.
out there. I don't know if it got that bad in the States. Maybe it did in some places.
See, it's funny you bring that up. I mean, I've heard both sides of having in the U.S. having separation of church and state, and then other people, you know, that'll you know, push back against that. No, you know, of course, our government was founded on biblical principles and those things, and so there's a whole nother group of people.
And we're not trying to be controversial with that, but I think your government should do government things, and your church should do.
Even within the church, there are people who are divided on that.
Yeah. What I'm getting at is, I don't want an elected representative telling me how to worship, Alan.
Yeah. I don't, and they won't. I mean, I see what you're saying, but then
they won't. But we just heard from Sasha that it's possible.
But I mean, like, the other side of that is that, you know, there are people who want Christians to be involved. And
no, I think we should be involved.
Yeah, I mean, that they
use your votes.
Yeah, because I mean, me being a public school employee, there are times that we are separated. You know, there's certain things we can't do because you're a public school, you're a public employee kind of thing. So there's both sides. People push back on both sides. But
okay, you just got Mark Gallen down as he would like the government involved in church.
Well, no, just Christians need to be involved in the government.
Can we please move on?
Yeah, didn't mean to bog you down.
Sasha, one thing I wanted to know about is, how are the churches doing over there 2 years into this war?
Well, it's a great question, because the church, just like the country, the church went through the evolution, and it was a tremendous evolution from having a huge success in the 90s, where lots of people who maybe came there for a wrong reason with wrong expectations, they showed up there because of the interest in this new type of religion, which they were not exposed to. Because in the perception of many people, the religion was that Orthodox church in which they could hardly understand any word that the priest was saying in the old Slavic language. And it was purely symbolic, and purely like you show up there for twice a year. So that was the perception of the religion. And like, it was very interesting for people to learn that the religion is alive, that you can have a direct study of what God wrote, and not through the priest, but you can just opening the Bible and reading and understanding. That's not something that's encouraged in the Orthodox Church. Of course, the Bibles are there, but there are no such thing as Bible classes to do, at least from what I knew about that. And so we had several churches that appeared in Kremenchuk and within my hometown, and some were more successful than others. But the central church in Kremenchuk was always the main one, and started to get a pretty good reputation among other churches in Ukraine with having a solid religious background. Now, at the beginning of the, of course, the COVID hit the church and any churches pretty hard. So the attendance dropped. The church had to be closed for a few months. But after the COVID, the church restarted with having 50, 60, 70 regular members. Now, when at the beginning of the war affected the eastern regions. Russians attacked. In 2014, they attacked Donetsk, and Donetsk region used to be the center of mission work. Sunset, Bear Valley, many Christian publishing houses, lots of churches were in Donetsk. Now, there's a great video by Simon Ostrowski, dated back from 2014, who was showing how those churches were confiscated by armed terrorists from the church groups, and how the church groups had to secretly meet in the houses and eventually had to flee into unoccupied territories. That video is showing, like, this is a... I have association with the barbaric persecutions of Christianity that we are seeing in the New Testament times. And since then, many people moved to Mariupol, Donetsk region, which became the new center of Christianity in that region. Now, with the start of the full invasion, all of that area was occupied, like south of Donetsk region was occupied, Mariupol was occupied. And those who were able to escape, they made Kremenchuk because Kremenchuk Church had a good reputation. Some of them picked Dnipropetrovsk, but some of them picked Kremenchuk as their new home. And the church grew from 50, 60, 70 members to 250, 260. So to the point that right now during services, the church building is not large enough. People are standing in the hallways. People are sitting on the windows. And on top of that, the church started the program to help the refugees who are not necessarily Christians. Eastern European Mission provided some funds for the church to give food to those in need, to the registered refugees who lost their houses. That's the specific target. And since Kremenchuk has a lot of them, like 20% of Ukrainian territory is occupied, and that territory was used to be the most densely populated coal mining regions of Eastern Ukraine. So you can imagine how many people had to flee from their houses, which were completely leveled by the war. And at some point, they were providing regular help to 1,000 refugees. Right now, I think they dropped to 700 or 800 a month packages that they hand to the refugees. But helping refugees with food. And like some of the refugees, they come there for food. Some of them come there for food and for some spiritual comfort, moral comfort. But some of them stay and become faithful members. And that's how the church grows. They have new baptisms regularly from the people who first heard about them as the mission.
So the church in Ukraine is flourishing through this war.
People are
coming together. Well, we offer something that everybody needs, but in a war-torn country, you need hope. You need something. Something you can hope in. You know.
Yeah. And yeah. I don't want to talk about all churches because we have to keep in mind that some churches are leveled to the ground, and some Christians, many thousands of Christians, lost their homes, and we don't know how many of them lost their lives. So it's a very bad reason, but particularly the church in Kremenchuk, it grew in its size at least 4 or 5 times because of the war. And also the church sees its mission not just by providing physical food to the refugees, but also to the bigger mission of the church in the time of the war is to explain the role of the Bible in those times when people are confused, people are lost, people are desperate. And so not to let people lose hope, just to explain, starting from the heart of Christianity, the Sermon on the Mount, what Jesus said, how do we understand what we read in the Sermon on the Mount? How do we understand in the times of war? Where is cruelty? And where is the defense of our own land? And the church, not to mention that the son of one of our elders is fighting among many other church members who are in the military and defending the country with the guns in their hands.
Now, we don't think about that much. We don't think about... you know, what we see on the news, and we talked the other day, the news cycle has changed. We've got a presidential election coming up, and that seems to be everything you turn on the news now. It's all presidential stuff. But we have brothers in Christ over there actively fighting in the trenches. We need to be praying for those men and women doing that every day because that's our family. Oh, and we don't think about it just because it's, I guess, the news cycle has changed. But that brings me to my point. My next question is what can we do for you, for our Ukrainian brothers? You know, how can we encourage them?
Well, it's a great question that can be answered at various level. I guess probably the first and foremost, Americans should keep in mind that America is the leader of the Christian world and is the leader of the free world, which at this time is the same. And America should not even think about stepping down from that role, because that will merge the entire world into chaos. Something similar happened like in the 30s, early 40s, when American nation thought they can stay away from the war going on in Europe, and it did not end up well, and there are World War II memorials throughout that country, because eventually the fire in your neighboring house will get to your house if you don't do anything. So keeping that in mind is crucial, and not to believe the populists who are trying to say that this is not our war, we can just stay away.
That's a big picture thing. None of us have the power to send billions of dollars anywhere.
Right.
But what can Big Show Joe or Daniel or Alan, what can we do? What can a church in West Virginia do? What on a smaller level, is there anything we can do to I just wish we could let them know that we're thinking about them.
I like that he just referred to himself as Big Show Joe. he so reluctantly took the moniker at the beginning.
Well, y'all forced it upon me. It is stuck. That sticker ain't coming off, buddy.
Sorry for the diversion.
That makes me think of the question: what's in common between Ukrainian and Russians? And you will see how that's related to your question. So both Ukrainians and Russians are thinking that we are a small people, like we are a little drop in the ocean. Now, the Russians would say, I'm a little drop in the ocean, nothing depends on me. And because this is how they are raised, like the government wants them to think as they are slaves, that they cannot change anything. Ukrainians are saying, I'm a little drop of the ocean, together we are an ocean, together we can do so much as we stick together. And the same thing applies to the brothers here. You may think that we, on the little level, we don't influence that much. But overall, the influence of the American society in, like 2 years ago, it was unbelievable how much support it was getting. And part of that, that was part of the reason why that miracle happened, that the small Ukraine withheld the massive invasion, which was supposed to be over in 3 days. Now, when it wasn't over in 3 days, I knew it's going to last forever. Not forever, but for years. It would either succeed in 3 days, well, after 3 days, or maybe in a week. I did not have any illusions of a quick outcome as a Ukrainian. Now, the amount of support, all the Ukrainian flags, all the support that I was getting, that was sent to Ukraine, that was tremendous. It was comparable to what the government was sending, and the government was sending. Maybe some would say not enough, but they were sending something. And what we are seeing now is pretty disturbing to me, and very disturbing, discouraging for Ukrainians, because the government support, for various reasons, vanished. And so did the support on the personal level. All the fundraisers that were so easy to run in 22, when Ukraine was all over the news, all of them are pretty hard or almost gone, and no one, since Ukraine is out of the news, Ukraine seems to be out of the hearts of people. And this is especially important when the government support is not going. Well, I personally supply drones to Ukrainian soldiers. I've supplied more than 40 drones so far, and I continue doing this with as much as resources as I have, pretty much my savings and any donations that I get go towards the drones, because they save lives. Those are civilian drones. They don't carry any weapons, but the soldier puts it in the air, and like he can see, that's like his eyes, and he sees where the enemy is coming from, and he is well informed. And they do save lives of soldiers, and they are so much cheaper to get here than they are to get in Europe or in Ukraine. So that's an additional factor. So the same dollar means more in the US than is sent overseas. And I think everyone should think that we are a little drop in the ocean of a free world, ocean of Christianity. And if we have to stick together and ask what we can do, don't wait for someone else to do it. What we can do, like find, I think the best way is to send money directly to people you know in Ukraine. And that if that's not possible, if you the people do not know anyone who is in Ukraine, there are some funds that provide a support on a larger level. So supporting the armed forces of Ukraine is crucial at this point, because if they fail, the entire country fails, and there would be no one to support.
Are there any organizations overseen by the Church of Christ that folks could give to that you know of, that our listeners might go to a website or something? Is there anything like that?
Well, the church, I'm thinking in terms of the Church of Christ. And well, there is Eastern European Mission that first that what comes to my mind is the one that provides food to the church in Kremenchuk. I guess what Eastern European Mission does is a great. So I would like to express thank to this American organization for doing what they're doing. As far as what it goes to you to the church in Ukraine, well, the church in Kremenchuk like became the local center for refugees. So if anyone would like to support the church in Kremenchuk, the elders would be very grateful for that.
So I'm interested in, I'm not surprised at all that Christianity is doing well in the midst of war, because I think historically Christianity tends to thrive during times of hardship, when things are rough. But I'm interested because most of our listeners probably have never experienced crisis on that type of level, existential type of crisis. What are the spiritual questions that Ukrainian Christians living in the Ukraine during this time of war, what are the spiritual questions that they're asking and that they're wrestling with that maybe people living all their lives in a time of peace wouldn't necessarily think of? It wouldn't be something that's top of mind for them.
That's a great question, because this is the spiritual, has to do with the spiritual role of the church, which is extremely important. People ask what's good and bad, what's evil, what's not, all the time. And organizations like Russian Orthodox Church, who claim themselves to be the church, and unfortunately the Pope, I have to mention that the Pope, recent Roman Pope, suggested that Ukraine should surrender. Ukraine should be brave enough to surrender. Now, you cannot come up with more nonsense than that. And especially if you hear from someone who calls themselves to be the spiritual leader of billions of Catholics. Now, Ukrainian Catholics already replied that that Ukrainian flag is blue and yellow. It's not a white flag that he is suggesting for Ukraine to use. And Ukrainians will live under that flag and will die under the flag, but will never throw out the white flag. Well, which is equivalent to dying in the case of Ukraine. Now, coming back to what the church has to do, the church, the mission of Christian Church, Church of Christ, is to fight those misbeliefs, because the evil is using the church as an instrument to trick people's heart. And again, that's not something new. We could see from the Bible times how the devil wants to use something that looks like truth to get to use false teachings. Like how many mentions of false teaching we see in the New Testament? And this is particularly important during this war, just to tell good from bad and to explain how we can stay strong and how we can stay sane, how we can stay Christians, yet doing the right thing, like defending our own countries. Like this war, on top of that, this war is not a symmetric war, how traditionally, like when one number of soldiers fighting a similar number of soldiers. Ukraine is outnumbered. Ukraine is outnumbered both in ammunition, in people, in resources, in everything. So So Ukraine has to come up with very non-traditional ways to fight. Now, when we look at the Bible, do we see these examples? Even in the Old Testament, you can look at the story of Gideon, how 300, but very, very motivated soldiers, using a very different approach, defeated an army of 135,000. And those examples should keep Ukrainians motivated, first of all, not to lose faith. Because there was no way that 300 soldiers would do anything without faith. So staying in faith is crucial. But also, to believe that Ukrainians are capable and of coming up with some non-standard solution, non-standard way to defeat the absolute evil that came to destroy everything that Ukraine and the free world stands on. Not just Ukraine. This war will not end in Ukraine. This war will continue because this is the war of authoritarian governments joined together against the free world.
Well, Big Show is holding up the clock for us, so we're going to wrap up here. But Sasha, thank you so much for your time, for coming and sharing your heart and your thoughts with us. Our prayers are with you and your loved ones back in the Ukraine.
Thank you for the opportunity. And I would like to thank once again the American people for that tremendous support that we got in the past 2 years. And Ukrainian brothers and sisters are praying for their country, and they are praying for America to stay strong as a leader.
And I don't know if the churches in Ukraine are listening to this podcast or not, but if any of our dear listeners are in the Ukraine right now, I want to thank you for what you're doing to hold up the cause of Christ in the midst of all this, and the way that you're showing love and the way that you're helping people that are in need, and using this time of crisis and terrible situation to exemplify your faith and to hold up Christ. So thank you for that, and please, you have our support in that, and keep that up. Well, so we again want to thank you, Sasha, for being here. We also want to thank the elders at the South Green Street Church of Christ for making soul training possible. We want to thank you, dear listener, for letting us be a part of your spiritual diet today. We hope that you will give us a 5-star rating, a review, send us an email. We'd love to hear from our dear listeners. And so, on behalf of Big Show Joe and Alan, I'm Daniel. Until next time, keep soul training. Got soul training. Time to practice what you preach. Ooh, yeah. Yes, we do. We've got soul training.
To learn more, you can email us at soultrainingpodcast@gmail.com, or you can write to us, P.O. Box 503, Glasgow, Kentucky, 42142. That's soul training.